Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf, Gittin Nuntes. We are holding seven lines from the top. V'omer Rav, Brei D'Rav, V'itema, some say it was Rabbi Hillel, Brei D'Rabbi Valos. We are meant to know that Mimois Moshe V'ad Rabbi, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, until the times of Rabbi HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the compiler of our Mishnayos, Lo Motzinu Torah U'Gedula B'Makim Echad, was never to be found that one individual, one leader in Klal Yisrael should encompass both of these exemplary elements, A, the greatest in Torah, B, the greatest in terms of wealth. It was never to be found. Moshe Rabbeinu had it, and Rabbi HaKadosh had it. But otherwise, nobody else met this criteria. Veloy, really? Nobody else fit this bill? Hava Yeshua? What about Yeshua? Who exemplified both elements? The answer is, he wasn't alone in this realm. Hava Elazar. Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen also matched up to him in terms of his greatness in Torah, and therefore, Yeshua wasn't exclusively in this realm, and therefore, we don't list them on this list. Hava Elazar, what about after Yeshua passed away? He was a yachid. He was unique in this realm. Hava Pinchas, but Pinchas was there as well. And he matched up to him in his greatness of in Torah. Vahava Pinchas, what about Pinchas after he took over? Hava Zekenu, they were the elders. Hava Shaul, what about Shaul HaMelech, who was great in both realms? Hava Shmuel, but Shmuel HaNavi was there. And he was as great in Torah as Shaul. V'honach Nafshi, but what happens if the Shmuel passed away and Shaul was alone, the greatest in both? Kuli Shnika Amrinan. Well, we're speaking about a leader who encompassed both criteria throughout his entire life. But until Shmuel passed away, Shmuel and Shaul both occupied this realm, and therefore Shaul doesn't qualify. V'hava David. What about David HaMelech? Hava Iri. Hayi Iri. Iri Hayi Iri was great in Torah as well, and therefore David HaMelech wasn't exclusive in this realm. V'honach Nafshi. What happened after Iri Hayi Iri passed away, leaving David as the greatest? Kulish Niba'inan. Again, we're speaking about something that lasted throughout his entire lifetime, which didn't happen in this case. Hava Shlomo. What about Shlomo HaMelech? Hava Shimon ben Gera, who was as great in Torah. V'okatli, but let's remember that Shlomo killed Shimon ben Gera. Kulish Nikamrin, and again, it wasn't a full lifetime of Shlomo, because part of it was shared with Shimon ben Gera. Hava Chizkiah, what about Chizkiah HaMelech? He was God of Torah, and certainly wealthy. Hava Shavna, but there was a man called Shavna, Rashi says, he was also God of Torah. But he was killed out. Kulu Shnika Amrinan, again, we're speaking about something that lasted throughout his entire lifetime, as opposed to here. V'hava Ezra HaNavi. Hava Nechemya Mechaklaya. Nechemya was a competing entity, so to speak. Amrav Acha Brei D'Rav. I want to add something to this list. We highlight Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. I have another one. Afani Omer. I'm going to add as follows. Mimois Rebbe, from the times of Rebbe HaKadosh, who encompassed this combination, V'ad Rabbi Ashi, until Rabbi Ashi's time, Rabbi Ashi, the compiler, editor of the Gemara, Lo Motzinu Torah G'dula B'Makim Echad, between them, between Rabbi and Rabbi Ashi, nobody else matched up to them in terms of greatness of Torah and G'dula, and wrapped in the same person. V'loi, really? V'ahav Rahuna Bar Nasan, who exemplified these two enwrapped elements. Shani Huna Bar Nasan, that's different. The makeup have a kaif leila Rav Ashi. So the Gemara's kasha was, well, Huna Bar Nasan was as great as Rav Ashi, and the answer is no. He was makeup kaif, he was subservient to Rav Ashi, considered Rav Ashi to be greater than him. So ultimately, Rav Ashi was the greatest leader in both realms, in Torah and in wealth. And the Farshim point out that Taras Chaim is an interesting point. What was unique about Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabbi HaKadosh, and Rav Ashi? Because they personify the Mesiras HaTorah, right? They were the ones who established. They were pivotal in establishing the Torah amongst Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu, Torah Shebichtav, Rabbi Danasi, the Mishnayos, Rav Ashi, the Gemara. And Hashem chose these tzaddikim, these leaders, and gave them the ability, the wherewithal, to have proper impact and influence on the masses. And certainly the fact that they were greatest in Torah and in wealth helped them along and facilitated their successful establishment of Torah amongst Klal Yisrael. Interesting point. Okay, continues the Mishnah, Chirish. So we know that a Chirish, Shaita V'Katan, a fellow who's deaf, mute, deranged, or a katan below adult age, Minat Torah, doesn't have the ability to affect transactions, to conduct Mekech U'Memkar, but Midrabbanan, we do allow it in some instances in order to facilitate trade between them and other members of the community, in order for them to, to enable them to look after their needs, to buy what they need. Therefore, says the Mishnah, even a Chirish who cannot speak, Rimeis, he can employ, a sign language in order to buy and sell Venirmas, and he can be shown sign language as well by others. Basically, he could communicate using body language, sign language, to buy and sell his metaltalin, not karka, but metaltalin, which are needed for his personal use. Uben besero imer, even a lesser form of communication is okay. Kofetz. Kofetz means to mouth with his lips. It's not as clear as actual sign language. That also can work. Kofetz, he can relate his intention to others in this manner. V'nikvatz, and likewise others can communicate to him in this manner as well, even though it's a lower form or a less clear form of communication. V'metatlan, provided we're speaking about buying and selling metatlan, but by karka, real estate, requires a more serious contemplative involvement, and that's not up for the Chirish to do. Hapautos, likewise, youngsters below bar mitzvah, mikchan mekach, memkar memkar, anything they buy or they sell is considered valid. Bimetatlin, again, we're speaking about metatlin, which are needed for their personal use. So we allow them to look after themselves for their basic needs, but again, for karka purposes, you need an adult with proper das to effect a sale. Amar Nachman, machlekes b'metaltlin, aval begitin divrei akol b'remiza. So we spoke about the fact that they can't buy and sell land, but they could metaltlin. What form of communication will they use? We have machlekes. Tanakhama says a more advanced expression called remez v'nirmas, body language, sign language. But Maseiros says, kofetz v'nikvatz, mouthing, lip movements, is sufficient. Right? By metaltlin. Question, what about gittin? Rashi brings the Mishnah in Yevamos. Even a Chirish can marry and divorce. Although min haTorah he can't, but min derabbanan. Kishem shenichnas b'remiza, kach moitzi b'remiza. Just as he's koines b'remiza, he can marry through this remiza form of communication. You can divorce using the same method. What method is enough? Do we need remiza, or is kvitza enough according to Ben Maseiro? Comes Rav Nachman, he says, when it comes to gittin, we're more serious about it, and you have to actually express your intentions with clarity, with remiza. Machlekes Ben Maseiro only allows the lesser form of communication by metaltin related transactions. Ava begitin, when it comes to divorcing, everybody agrees, even Vesera would agree, Beremiza, you need Remiza. Pshita, of course. Metaltin tnan, the Mishnah specified. Ben Vesera's allowance only applies to metaltin. Apparently, Gitin needs more. Maldotim, perhaps I would say, Af metaltin. you can use that form of communication. Even my Gittin, Chiddush was even metatlin that he perhaps inherited it from a father, which is minat Torah his. He didn't acquire it through just hinting. He actually owns it minat Torah because he got it through a Yerusha. So I would think perhaps to buy and sell that, you need a higher form of communication. That's what Mimser is coming to tell you. No, even metatlin can utilize the kfitza method. But when it comes to a get, perhaps just like he acquired her through kvitza, he can divorce her in the same way. And that's Rav Nachman's chiddush. No, when it comes to get, we're more serious. We need things to be more clearly articulated, more clearly. Ikadar, there's another version of Rav Nachman. It's all the same. Kamachlekes b'tatlan, kamachlekes b'gitin. Just as Ben Bezerah allows kvitza to be used for matatlan. The same for gitin. Asks the Gemara, what do you mean? The Mishnah says otherwise. Va'anan b'metatlan t'nan. Mishnah says that according to B'mesera, kfitza is only satisfactory by metatlan. Eima af b'metatlan. The Mishnah means even by metatlan, which perhaps he had acquired through a Yerusha, which makes it his menatura, Chachamim u'mesakin, that this form of interaction is sufficient for metatlan transactions, and the same with respect to gittin. So bottom line, let's summarize. A cherish. When it comes to mekarkin, real estate, nothing to it. When it comes to metaltlin, we're going to see in a minute, the chachamim will mesakin kidei chayav, to allow him, you know, to look after himself and his needs. So these sort of minor transactions are acceptable. What form of communication must be used? Machlekes. Tanakama requires a higher form of interaction, Reimez v'nirmas, but Mesera says Kofetz v'nikvetz is enough. Regarding Gittin, we have two versions in the Gemara. Either all agree by Gittin, Remiza is required, and Kvitza is not sufficient, according to the second version. The same Achlekes that applies to Metatlan applies to Gittin as well. Hapo'itez mikchan memkach, memkar memkar, Metatlan, likewise youngsters, healthy youngsters, below bar mitzvah age, can wheel and deal with tatlin. Bad kama. Until what point? Until how young, basically. Meaning, how old must the child be? It must be some minimum age. Machvi Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda pointed towards his son, who some of Farshim learned was a youngster at the time, the Rav Yitzchak Brei. Kvar shis, kvar shev. About 6 or 7. And the Nemuk Yosef says, he mentioned 2 ages. 6, 7. What was he? Was he 6 or was he 7? By a boy, it's 7. If it's a girl, she has a higher degree of maturity. It comes to her quicker. Says Mukhe Yosef, so a year younger is okay. So if it's a girl, 6, a boy, 7. Interesting point. Rav Kana Amar, Kvar Shev Kvar Tami. He has to be 7 or 8. Masnisatan in the Braisa, we have a year or more. Kvar Tesha Kvar Esa, 9 or 10 years old. V'loy Pligi, there isn't any machlekes at all between all these ages. Kol chad v'chad afi churfei. It's all about how mature the kid is, how sharp the kid is. So you have to reckon each kid and evaluate his level of intelligence and understanding. And that's what it's based on. So we have this range. You can go anywhere from 6 and up, all depending on his intelligence level. V'tam amai. So why did the Rabbanon enable a young child to buy and sell matatlin? Amar Rav Abba Bar Yaakov Amar Rav Yechon Shem Kedei Chayev. So that he can look after his needs and take care of himself. You know, and buy and sell as per his basic needs. Okay, on account of the teretz that we just had from Rav Abba Bar Yaakov, the Gemara will bring another drasha, lesson from the same under Amar. Sort of a bit off topic. So this was in the time of Yehu, who was trying to punish the servants of the Baal of Avodah Zarah. So he told the fellow there in charge of the uniforms, go dress them up, this way they'll be discernible and we can identify them. So he tells the fellow, La'asher ala maltecha, in charge of the maltecha, which the Marsun will tell us is the, you know, the linen, the clothing. Go bring clothing for the worshippers of the Baal. Ma maltecha, what is maltecha? Mina Rabba Rabba Yaakov. Oh, so that's the same under Amr. Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Dabar ham nimlal v'nimtach. We're speaking about linen, flax material, which is spun by being nimlal, which means, you know, spinning between one's fingers, v'nimtach, and stretching. That's how they do it. So it's a reference to linen material. Kiyasa Rav Dimi, Rav Yechanan. On the same topic, we have a story, the name of Rav Yechanan, Shigir Loi Bunyus Ben Nunyus. So there was a wealthy man, his name was Bunyus Ben Nunyus. Bunyum Ben Nunyum. He sent a gift to Lerebi, to Rabbeinu HaKadosh. All types of exquisite linen material, clothing made of linen material. One was called Sivni, one was called Vechumas, Salsala, Malmala. The Gemara explains, Sivni Vechumas, these two types were so high-end that they were so thin. The actual material thickness was so thin, kamagoyza or palga magoyza. So when you take this whole baguette and you sort of fold it up, the mass equals a nut and a half a nut, 1.5 nuts in terms of mass. That's how thin the material was. And the other two forms of material, salsalo and malmala, also were very thin, kipistika or palga de pistika. Rashi says it's referring to a gall nut. So also the same concept. You would fold it up and you would end up with 1.5 gall nuts in terms of the actual material size. My malmala, why was it called malmala? Dabar hanimlal b'nimtach, as we said before, it's spun and stretched between one's fingers. V'tusanat kamal. Okay, let's go back to the topic on hand. A katan. Buy something. Sell something. Suppose he overcharges or undercharges. What happens to the toes? So we know that by an adult, we have an entire perek, hazav, and metzia. Parts of it discuss the idea of aino, toes, by mekech hamemkar. We have all kinds of guidelines. What happens to a katan? If he overcharges, he makes a mistake. Does the sale stand or not? But to usen not come. Or just like an adult. Well, we have three level, so to speak. If there was an error committed and it's less than a sixth in terms of disparity, then we say it's mechila. If it's a sixth, then the sale stands, but you have to return, you know, the discrepancy. If it's more than a sixth, we say it's mekach batel. The whole transaction is null and void. So those same guidelines apply to a katan's transactions as well. We don't differentiate. Here comes an interesting question. So you can buy and sell as per his need, right? What about gifting? Can he give a gift? Does a katan have the ability to give something away for free? Bayabai. Matnasei mai. How would you treat his matana? Rav Yemer amar ein matnasei matana. No. He can't just give a matana. The whole point was that he can look after his needs, but just to give away stuff? Wait until you have proper perspective and proper das to do that. Mar bar of Ashi, so Mar, the son of Rashi, disagrees. He says, Amar matnasei matana. It does work. And Rashi explains. There's a reason why he's giving it away. Nobody just gives away for nothing. Apparently that recipient had done him some good, and he's just reciprocating, he's showing appreciation. So that's also the way of the world, and it benefits the katan as well, that he, you know, people will be inclined to help him, etc. So that's all part of the takana with the chachamim, enable the katan to be subtly involved in business transactions. So again, the question was how to deal with a matana of a katan. We came up with a machlekes. Rav Yemer says, no, Mar, the son of Rashi, says it works. Now, avchua v'shadrua l'kamedi Rav Mordechai. Some of the Bnei Yeshiva switched around, perhaps mistakenly, they switched around the names of these opinions, and they sent it to Rav Mordechai. Basically, turns out that he heard that Mar, the son of Rashi, did not allow the matana to go through. Amar Lusa, Rav Mordechai responded to the people around him, Imru Lebar Mar, go respond to the son of our Rebbe, Mar, the son of Rashi. Wasn't there a story as follows with his own father, who ruled otherwise, who ruled that it works? When our Rebbe Ravashi was standing, Chad Karia Ara, one foot on the ground, Chad Karia Darga, one foot on the step, we caught him right there when we asked him a question. And we asked him, what about the Matana Vakat? Matnas Mai, how would you deal with that? And he said, Matnas Matana, it works. Echas Matnas Shivmara, Vachas Matnas Bari, whether the child is healthy, whether he's unhealthy. Achas Matana Meruba, Vachas Matana Me'etas, whether he gave away a lot or a little. We treat it like a legal transaction, just like a sale, and it works. Okay, so bottom line, he seemed to hold pretty strongly that it works. So let's just recap the Gemara. We have the halacha of the Cheirish. How does he deal with indications, with remises, with kfitzes? A cotton as well can buy and sell. The point is kadei chaya, so that he can supply himself with his needs. And the Gemara concluded, at least according to Rav Ashi, even a matana of a cotton is valid. Continues the Mishnah with items that are related to Darkei Shalom, to maintaining peace and tranquility amongst the members of the community. Eilu Dvarim, the following halachis, the following guidelines were established by the Chachamim, Amru Medarkei Shalom, to keep the peace. We have a whole string of halachis. Number one, in terms of Kriyas HaTorah and the aliyos that are distributed, in which order do we give out the aliyos? First comes the Kayin Rishon, and then Vachrav Levi, Vachrav Yisrael. Why? To keep the peace. So they instituted a set system, non-negotiable, and not given to personal discretions. Likewise, Ma'arvin Bebayis Yoshan. So here we have the halach of Eruv Chatzeres. We have many people sharing a courtyard. In order to enable them to carry in the courtyard, they have to sort of share together and become one residency. How do they do that? By collecting bread from all and placing it in one home. That becomes a central focal point and unifying residence for all of them. So if they had a custom to put the Eruv Chatzeres in a specific home, they don't switch locations. Ma'arv Bayis Yoshan, they keep in the old house, Medarki Sholem, to keep the peace. We have an irrigation pipe running out to the fields. So the first field near the river, which feeds that irrigation pipe, has a right to fill up his reserve pit first. That's the way it goes. And then comes the next field, etc. Medarki Sholem. Mitsudo is chayav oifes v'dogim. Yeish ben mishim gazel. Mishim darki Sholem. An animal found trapped in a trapper's net cannot just be stolen and taken out, even though technically it doesn't belong to the trapper. It's sitting in the middle of nowhere. We consider it to be gezel, thievery. Again, we pay Darkei Shalom to keep the peace and to be fair to the trapper who invested all that effort in trapping that animal. Rabbi Yossi Eimer, he takes it a step further. Not only do we say, oh, don't touch it, it's Darkei Shalom, gezel gomer, chacham, consider the animal as though he belongs to the hunter. With the Rabbanu, we consider him to be the true owner, and a person who takes it away from the trap is over on Gezel. With the Rabbanu, we consider him a Gazlan. Mitzias Chere Shait V'Katan. Suppose a Chere Shait V'Katan finds something in the street, so technically, they went out Zoicha. Can somebody just come and snatch it away? No. Yeshua Mishim Gezel. It's improper to take it away from them. Again, to keep the peace. We treat it like true thievery. We have a poor man climbed up to the tippy top of the olive tree to shake off some abandoned olives. Masha tacht of gezel, so anything that drops below the tree is considered his, even though he hadn't really acquired it. He just tipped it off the tree. Nobody can come take that. Again, we pay darkei sholem. We say, oimer gezel gomer. And finally, eino machen. So a farmer leaves behind the leket, the shikha, the payah for the aniyim, presumably for aniyah Yisrael. What happens if a guy comes along? We don't chase him out, we don't protest, we don't give him a hard time, we don't block him when it comes to collect the leket, shikha, payah, again, based on this idea of in Pnei Darkei Shalom to keep the peace amongst everybody, even the guy. Okay, back to the first Mishnah, the first item in the Mishnah. Who gets the first Aliyah? Kohen, then comes a Levi, then comes Yisrael. Manan, immediately, how do we know that it is so? Meaning, why did the Chachamim, we understand Chachamim wanted to institute a set system, but why in this order? Why Kohen and then Levi? And then Yisrael. Amar Masna, we have a pasuk for it. Amar Kro, Vayichtov Moshe Sator Azoyis, V'itnoha Elakehan Bnei Levi. So Moshe Rabbeinu writes the Torah, gives it over to the Kohanim Bnei Levi to read the Torah. Question, why does it have to say Kohanim Bnei Levi? Don't we know Kohanim come from Shevet Levi? Atu Anola Yedana, don't we already know the Kohanim Bnei Levi Ninu? Ella, rather it's coming to teach us the exact order of Kriyas HaTorah. Kohanim, and then Bnei Levi. Kohen Bereisha, first the Kohen, but the Levi, then comes the Levi. Rabbi Tzunavcha Amar Mehocha, I have another source. V'ignikshu HaKohanim Bnei Levi. So the Kohanim Bnei Levi approached. Again, the same question. Why stipulate Kohanim Bnei Levi? Atu Anan Le'adino, the Kohanim Bnei Levi. Don't we already know Kohanim come from Shevet Levi? Ela Kohen Bereisha. Vada Levi. So we see from here that Kohanim come before the Levim. Ravashi Amram Mehocha, we have another source. Bnei Amram, who are the children of Amram? Aaron and Moshe. And the pasuk continues. Vayavdil Aaron Lagdisha Kodesh Kadashim. Hashem separated Aaron and Kohen and gave him a title Kodesh Kadashim, Holy of the Holiest. So you see that the Kohanim are on top. And the Rashash brings the Gemara Harius David Gimel. Be'esahu Hivdil Hashem es Shevet HaLevi. So you find I have Dullah attributed to Aaron HaKohen, he was separated. And we also find another pasuk. Likewise, Shevet Levi was separated and put above the Bnei Yisrael. So we see a clear hierarchy. Kohen, then Levi, then Yisrael. Rav Chiya Bar Abba Amar Mehocha, of another source, V'kidashtoi. Pasuk says you meant to be Mekadesh, treat the Kohen with holiness, with kavod. L'chol davar shebekdusha, anything involving kedusha, given the best, the first. Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, and the Brayis of Rabbi Shmuel elaborates on this. V'kidash l'chol davar shebekdusha means l'ftayach rishon, when it comes to who should speak first, who should read the Torah first, the Kohen. V'levarach rishon, he should make the first bracha by a meal. V'litil mana yafa rishon, he gets the best pick in terms of the meal portions. So that's why the Kohen always goes first. Amalei Abayi L'Rav Yosef. Okay, so we have so many sources which indicate that the Kohen comes first, and then the Levi, then the Yisrael. Amalei Abayi L'Rav Yosef. So why does Mishnah say that the reason for this is Medarki Yishoin? Deiraisa, it's rooted in the Psukim. Amalei Deiraisa, you're right, it's Minat Torah, but the Mishnah is simply giving a reason for this Halacha Minat Torah. That's the reason for the Torah insisting on this system, to keep the peace. Asks the Gemara, well, if that's what the Mishnah meant, it's Minat Torah, but the reason given for the Halach and the Torah is Darkei Shalom. Kol HaTorah Kula Nami. Upnei Darkei Shalom Hi. Likewise, all the Halachas in the Torah are meant to enhance our well-being and peace. Dichsev, as the pasuk says, the ways of the Torah are pleasant, and it all generates peace. So what's so special and unique about the Aliyahs in the Torah? Elam Abaye. So Abaye says like this, you're right. The Seder Kriya B'Torah is Minat Torah. Kohen, Levi, and Yisrael, it's all hinted in the Psukim, as mentioned before. When the Mishnah speaks about another element of Darkei Shalom, it's to add another layer, another aspect to this arrangement. To tell you, you can't forego your honor. You can't give it up to somebody that you honor, that you would like to take your place, even if he's an Adam Chashav, a Rebbe. And that's the point of our Mishnah. It's absolute, non-negotiable. And that's based on Darkei Shalom. Otherwise, it's a never-ending proposition. El Amabai L'Kedemar. It's coming to highlight the din of our Rebbe. Rabba was Abaye's Rebbe. This Sunday we have a Brice. Shnayim Amtinin Zelaza Bekara. So it's Alochen, Hilchas Derecheretz of Suda. You have two people sharing a meal. They have to wait for each other. Derecheretz. One wouldn't start until the other one comes and joins. Shloisha ein mamtilim. If you have three people sharing, you know, a joint bowl of food, and one of them gets up, the other two don't have to wait for him because they're the majority. Habitzeya, the one who's honored with breaking the bread, with cutting the hamaitzi bread, who poishet yodet chilo, he's given the honor of reaching out first for the additive, the accompanying food. He gets the first crack at it. Or now, if this Beitzeya wants to forego his privilege of being the first to take from the middle, he wants to give the kavod to his Rebbe, or a person who's greater than him, he can do that. It's up to him. And our Rebbe, Rabba, added to this price, and he explains, when can you be machabed somebody greater than you? Elabas Uda. During mealtime, as we says. Avo b'sakneses, like, but if it's in shul, in terms of the aliyah l'Torah, if a kohen chooses to be mechabit, to honor his Rebbe, so instead of the kohen doing the aliyah, he'll give it to his Rebbe. Lo, we don't allow it. Why? That's just going to trigger all kinds of machlekes. The asur l'nisuyei. That's the point of our Mishnah. The system itself, we know from the Torah. But the absoluteness, the non-negotiability of the system, that's based on Darkei Shalom, and that's introduced in our Mishnah. Omar of Masna, Hoda Amris, Bebeis HaKnesas Loi. This that we've just said, that in the shul we don't negotiate. Loi Amar and Elbe Shabbos Yom Tov. Shechichi Rab, that only applies on public days, Shabbos, Yom Tov, when the multitudes are to be found in shul. We don't want to run into a machlekes. Aval b'sheni v'chamishi loy, but if it's just Monday and Thursday, where the crowds are pretty thin, then the concern isn't as serious, and therefore we don't have to be concerned about machlekes. We can be mechabed an adam gadol instead of the kayin. And Taisa says, "Omer Rabbi Natan, hani mila d'tu." That applies in their time. B'chayil have a treat of malachtan. That many people didn't come to shul during weekdays because they were busy with their work. But nowadays, says Taisus in his days, and certainly, hopefully today as well, the shul is packed on Monday and Thursday, just like on Shabbos and Yontif. In any case, says the Gemara, Eini, is that so that on Shabbos and Yontif, the kohen cannot forego his aliyah? V'Rav Huna. Kari b'kahani b'shabbosos v'yomtiv. Rav Huna, who was a Yisroel, wasn't the kohen. He would take the aliyah of the kohen on Shabbos and Yomtiv. The answer is Shani Rav Huna. Rav Huna is different. He was a cut above the rest. He was recognized by all to be the greatest in Torah. Da'afilu Rav Amir Rav Asi, even Rav Amir Asi, who kahani chashiv, that's Yisroel, the most prominent, kohanim in Eretz Yisroel, makeav. Habu Kaifilei, they were bottled, they were subservient to, they had a greater respect for Rav Huna, and therefore giving him the Aliyah of Kain would be well accepted and understood by the crowds. Nobody would question it or create a ruckus. Amar Abaye. So we know the Kain comes first, then the Levi, then Yisrael. Naktina, we have this Kabbalah, the Halacha. Ein Sham Kain. What if there's no Kain in Shul to get his first Aliyah? Question, do we go to the Levi and then Yisrael or not? Nisparda, Chavila, the whole bundle, so to speak, unravels. Basically, the system is cancelled for the time being. Right? If you have a coin, so the next covet is Levi. If there's no coin, just skip the whole system. And we just give the Aliyah to the Yisrael, according to one pshat and Rashi. It's our choice, our pick. You can have the Yisrael, you can have the Levi, it's up to them. Var Abaye, Naktinan, we have another tradition, another halacha. Ein Sham Levi, Koyre Koyin. Suppose we do have a Koyin, but no Levi. So we get a Koyin to do the second Aliyah as well. The Gemara at this point figures, we get another Koyin. Koyin number two to take over for the Levi. Eini, is that so? Is that an option? V'am Rav Yechanan, we shouldn't do that. We should never do back-to-back Koyhanim. Koyin achar koyin lo yikra. You know why? Mishum pugamish al rishon, because it might cast the first koyin's yichus into question. Why are we doing another kain? Why are we doing it? Well, apparently we've discovered that the first kain isn't really a kain. So you should never do one kain after the other. And likewise, when it comes to Levim, never do back-to-back Levim. Levi achar Levi la'yikra, mishum gam shneim, because it can put both of their yichus into question. The Gemara soon will explain why this difference in language. By the kain, it's only a concern of the first one's yichus, by the Levim, both of them. We'll see that in a minute. In any case, how could we say when there is no Levi in town, no Levi in a shul, the kain gets another aliyah, which sounds like it's back-to-back. No, we're not speaking about two kohanim. The same kain, like we do today. Right? After his aliyah, he goes back again and gets another aliyah, the same kain, so there's no question in terms of his yichus. Okay? Now, back to that lashon that we said before. We don't do back-to-back kohanim because pagam of the first one. Back-to-back levim because of both pagam. Why is it that when it's back-to-back Levi'im, we're concerned about both their reputation? The Amri, because people can speculate and say, Chad Minayu, Lav Levi'u, perhaps one of these two individuals has been discovered not to really be a Levi. Either the first one was not a Levi, and therefore they had to redo it with the second one, or the second one is not really a Levi, in which case, that explains why he came after the Levi. He's really Yisrael. He's not really a Levi as we thought. So just as by the back-to-back Levium, we have these concerns, and the concern applies to both individuals, Kohen achar Kohen Nami. Same exact concern can apply to a back-to-back Kohen. Nami Amri, Chad Minayu, Lav Kohen Hu. One of these two, perhaps, is not a Kohen. Right? Maybe the first one's not a Kohen. That's why we need to do a redo. Or perhaps the second one is not a kohen. That's why he came after the kohen. And why does the Gemara say we're only concerned about the first one? Just like by the Levim. It's a double concern here as well. Answers the Gemara, Kigoy de muchsuk lom b'avua da hayshene de kohenu. We're speaking that it is known fact that the father of kohen number two was a real kohen. There's no question that he's also a kohen. So that's why we're not concerned about his yichus. Well, same thing when it comes to the Levim. Hachinami, the Muchsuk Lam Ravu, the Hayat Shein, the Levihu. Back-to-back Levim. Okay, so let's speak about a case that it is known that the father of the second Levi is a proper Levi. So if that's the case, then there's no doubt in terms of his Yichus. Ella, Amri Mamzeres, and Asina Nosif. So, apparently, it doesn't help us. Even if it's a known fact that the father of the second Levi is a proper Levi, but who do you marry? He could have been a proper Levi, but if you married him, Amzeres or Nesina, improper, Shidduch, then the kid is disqualified from Levia. El Amri, Mamzeres, or Nesina Nasiv, Apostle Lazari. When they see a Levi come after another Levi, they'll say, because Levi number two is a product of an improper marriage. Hachanami. So same thing with the Kayan. The same exact concern applies in both. Amri, Grusha, Echelutza Nasiv. Same thing with the back-to-back kohanim. Okay, say we know the father of the second kohen is really a proper kohen, but maybe he married a grusha, a divorcee, or a chalutza, and she went through chalitza. Well, it was not an appropriate match for a kohen, and this child born from that marriage is a chalo, is a non-kohen. So basically, the same concern that applies to a Levi applies to a kohen. Soif save Levi mikohavi. Oh, the response is like this. When we have back-to-back Levium, the concern applies to both. We can speculate that the first Levi was not a proper Levi. That's why we decided to redo the Aliyah with the second Levi, who was a proper Levi. Or we can go the other way. First one was okay. Second one, well, even if his father was a Levi, but you don't know what happened there. Maybe he's the product of an improper, inappropriate marriage. And he didn't like Yisrael. Right? But when it comes to back-to-back kohanim, this doesn't apply. The concern is only perhaps the first one was not a kosher kohen. That's why we need to redo, to repeat the aliyah with a proper kohen. But the other way, the other concern doesn't apply. If for instance, to claim, to speculate, to think that perhaps Kohen number one was okay. Okay, he's a certified Kohen, proper Kohen. But this second Kohen, who came after him, the reason why he comes after the Kohen, because he's not really a Kohen. Why? Let's think for a second, why? So even though perhaps his father is a proper Kohen, but maybe he married a Grusha, in which case what happens? The son is disqualified from Kohuna, he's called a Chalo. Right, that's what you're suggesting, right? That doesn't work, because why would he get the Aliyah after the Kohen? That doesn't make him a Levi. Remember, after Kohen comes Levi, why is he being Oile after the Kohen? Save Levi Mikahavi, how does that make him into a Levi? He's either a proper Kohen or nothing, or Yisrael. Chalo is like Yisrael. So the fact that he's coming after a Kohen preempts this concern. He couldn't have been a product of an improper marriage. So why shouldn't we do back-to-back Kohanim? Oh, because that might set the wheels in motion in terms of speculating on the first Kohen. Kohen number one wasn't a kosher Kohen, and that's why it required a redo with a second Kohen. So that explains the wording and terminology that we used before. Okay, bottom line is, we have these concerns about Yichus. Uleman, who are we trying to, whose fears and speculations are we trying to accommodate? Uleman, Ili Yoishvim, the people sitting in shul throughout the entire Kriyas HaTorah, Hakachazile, well, they see themselves that we counted them into the count of the Aliyahs. Let's say Shabbos, we need 7 Aliyahs. We had Kohen number 1 for Aliyah number 1. Kohen number 2, Aliyah number 2. Then comes this, till we get to number 7. So apparently everything was good. Otherwise they would not count. They wouldn't count for the 7 Aliyahs. Eli, right, Li Yates, I'm concerned about people who ran out in the middle and only saw the first part of Kriyas HaTorah. And they'll perhaps think that the back-to-back Aliyahs is indicative of an improper Aliyah, which required a redo, not realizing that in fact we counted them into the full count of 7 Aliyahs, and they'll start thinking about the kashrus and yichus of these individuals. So one must be careful not to run into these types of situations. Okay, who gets the Aliyah after the Kohen Levi? That's the next sugya, but there's Hashem coming up tomorrow. Okay, so we started with the fact that Hashem sometimes endows the leader of Klal Yisrael with exemplary talents of Torah and Gedula, wealth and Madregas of Torah, in order to bring about the proper Mesiras HaTorah and lead Klal Yisrael in the right direction. The fact is that people are impressed and get swayed by the words of wealthy people. So it's a maila and a leader to have that as well, to be mashpia properly on the masses. Then we go into the next sugya, how a cherish and katan would interact, and of course it only applies to matatlan. The point is to protect their basic interests, to allow them to look after themselves and their basic needs. We explain how the cherish interacts through remiza, through kfitza. And we determine the minimum age of a katan who's enabled for this system. And the Gemara tells us it's all about his level of intelligence, it's all relative to his churfa. We had a machlekes whether a katan can do a matana as well. And then we went on to the sugi of Darki Sholem, a whole string of takanes, first of which was the seder of the aliyahs in the shul. We have many sources in the psukim, and Abaya adds another twist to it, that it's non-negotiable, you can't defer to an Adam Gadol. And Mora says it's only when there's a Rabbi in Shul. And then we concluded with various scenarios. Suppose there's no Kayin, and we skip the whole system. There's no Levi, we have the Kayin, the same Kayin, be Oyla b'makim de Levi, right? But we never do a back-to-back Kayhanim or back-to-back Levim in order to maintain and preserve their reputation and yichus. Hatzlacha rabbi to you and besurais teivais.